Well, I lied. Looks like you're going to get a second video before the decade is over. And this one is going to be about how reproduction is a fiction. I'm going to explain that to you. How can reproduction be a fiction? And this is going to be one of those episodes that deals with some of the radical consequences of non-duality, which I've touched upon in the past. And I'll have an episode in the future, which is going to be a long laundry list of the many radical consequences and implications of non-duality. It's funny because, in a certain sense, you can have an awakening to the truth of what you are, but then separate from that is all of the fallout and all of the consequences, which can take you years to fully flesh out and realize what those are for life. And so many people who even are doing spiritual work and really do have a few awakenings, still, they don't realize all the ramifications. And the ramifications are so radical that if most people were told these ramifications by a spiritual teacher up front, they would never pursue spirituality. And they would certainly think that it's nonsense because the consequences are so radical and so outrageous. And they sound so absurd and so impossible that it sounds like a fiction. And yet the opposite is the case. So, anyways, how is reproduction a fiction? Well, first of all, we have to distinguish between sex and reproduction. So, I'm not going to be talking about sex per se. I'm talking about biological reproduction here in this episode. But of course, if we're going to be talking about sex, which I could talk about in the future, in a separate episode, of course, one of the radical consequences of non-duality is that all sex is sex with yourself. There's no other for you to have sex with because non-duality means oneness. Oneness means there's one thing, there's only the universe. So who's having sex? The universe is having sex with itself. You are the entire universe, therefore, you are always having sex with yourself, whether you're using a hand or a vagina, or a penis, or a mouth, or an anus to do it. Doesn't matter. And whose you're using also doesn't matter. Now, I mean, in the absolute sense, in the relative sense, it matters a lot because there are certain parts of the body with certain people that you can use, which will get you into trouble. So you do have to be careful about that. This is not a license to go rape. This is just how it looks like from the absolute perspective. But anyways, let's get to reproduction. So biological reproduction. There's this idea that our culture ingrains in our minds, and for a good reason, which we'll get into in a minute, that it's important for you to reproduce. This is part of the myth and the religion of scientific materialism. See, materialism is not merely, you know, there's a lot to materialism. It's not merely that there is a material reality. Yes, that's the fundamental foundation of scientific materialism. But there's, of course, also other corollaries that come along with the materialist religion. And one of those is that you're a biological organism and that one of your most important functions in life is to reproduce. And this idea gets so ingrained in our minds by our parents, by society, by our religion, even by science, that we really start to believe in this myth that, oh, if I don't reproduce myself biologically, then somehow something is going to be lost. It's going to be bad. This is something negative. See? But of course, reproduction is a relative notion. And here we're bringing in the concept of relativity. This is a powerful concept that I talked about in my episode called Understanding Relativism, Part 1 and Part 2. I haven't released yet, but I will in the future because it's such an important topic. So hang on for that coming soon. You need to understand that episode before you can truly understand what I'm about to tell you. So relativity is a fundamental feature of reality and of consciousness. Everything is relative to one's vantage point and one's perspective. And in this case, we're applying relativism to the notion of biological reproduction itself. See, most people hold, and this is part of the myth of scientific materialism, is people hold that reproduction is a brute, objective, physical fact. And either you have reproduced or you haven't reproduced. And there's only one way you can reproduce, which is genetically, by having children. And if you don't do that, then it's not reproduction. And then your genes die, and then that branch of the family tree is killed, and all of your genetic pool is basically lost, or some narrative like this. See, and it sounds legit. How else could it be, you might wonder? I mean, isn't this a physical fact that this is how we reproduce? But of course, reproduction is relative to how you define the self, which is the core question of life and the core question of spiritual work, is what are you? What is the self? If you believe the self is a biological entity, this body sitting here or that body sitting over there, and you believe that it's biological, then yeah, you're limited to that paradigm of reproduction. But that's not because it is that way objectively, that's because you think of it that way subjectively. You see, there are other ways to think about reproduction. And in fact, so here's one of the other radical consequences of oneness and non-duality, is that if there is only one thing in the universe, namely the universe itself, and if you are the entire universe, then every movement of the universe is its own reproduction. Not merely you squirting some sperm into some hole, or you receiving some sperm into some hole. Not merely that. Those are very limited actions of the universe, which you have labeled reproduction, because you're so attached to that hole. Whether it's yours or not yours, you're either chasing it or you're chasing for someone to enter it, right? But that's a very, very limited paradigm to limit the universe's reproduction just to that. The universe is reproducing in an infinite variety of ways, literally infinite. Infinite reproduction. That's how we could think of the whole universe. Everything that's happening is the universe reproducing itself, especially if we're considering the actions of organic life forms, and humans specifically, and the work that humans do. See, reproduction is not limited to genetics at all. This is far too narrow of a paradigm. You are reproducing yourself as you're living your life by interacting with other human beings. In fact, you can reproduce yourself more effectively through your impact on culture and on society and on people than you can biologically. For example, who remembers these days the children of Shakespeare? Do you know who the children of Shakespeare were? Do you know who his grandchildren were? How many generations ago was that? 20, 50, 100 generations ago that Shakespeare was alive? Yet we know about Shakespeare today. Why? Not through his children. Those have long been forgotten, and that gene pool has been completely diluted by this point, such that there's nothing recognizable left of Shakespeare. If you looked at the great-great-great-great-great-granddaughter of Shakespeare, if one even existed, she would bear very little resemblance physically, biologically, genetically to Shakespeare because of so much intermixing of the gene pool. She wouldn't look like him. So what has really been passed on, what has really been retained? Shakespeare reproduced himself through his plays, through his written work. And that reproduction has been so successful that here we are some 500 years later, and everybody in the world who's a little bit educated knows Shakespeare. How's that for reproduction? And mankind will still probably know Shakespeare 2,000 years from now if we're still alive. How amazing is that? But by that point, all of his genes will have been smeared through the entire human species, and nothing will be recognizable of it. You see? Now you say, well, yeah, Leo, sure, of course, but here, Leo, aren't you using the notion of reproduction very loosely and metaphorically and kind of poetically? Sure, we could sort of say in a poetic manner that Shakespeare reproduced himself through his plays, but he didn't really. That's like a fiction. That's like a trick of the mind. What's real reproduction is the genetic, physical, biological reproduction. And what I'm telling you is that no, your insistence that biological, physical, genetic reproduction is the one true reproduction, that is the fiction that you have to understand. See? Why are you selecting that above all the other ways that one could reproduce as the one true one? Only because that's a self-biased position that you have. See? And you're not appreciating the relativity of reality. What relativity here means is that there is no one true way to reproduce, because all of them, all actions of the entire universe, are reproduction in different ways with different consequences. Of course, there's different consequences. I'm not saying that Shakespeare reproducing himself through his written works has the exact same consequences as you reproducing yourself genetically. Yes, there's different consequences. But also consider that genetic reproduction might not be the most important kind of reproduction. What you count as important or significant or meaningful, that's your projection onto reality. That's not inherent to reality. If you think that genetic reproduction is the most important kind of reproduction, that's your subjective opinion. That's not a biological fact. You see, biology tells you how reproduction works on the genetic level. As far as that goes, there's no problem. It's pretty accurate and good. That science is good. The problem is when people add on top of the science. See, it's not enough. The religion of materialism isn't merely strict science. It's science in addition to a bunch of other extra projections and extrapolations and conclusions and interpretations, which are extremely selfish and self-biased and coming from a human perspective. They're not objectively true in any sense. See? So the idea that you have to, that it's important for you to reproduce yourself genetically, this is untrue. That's relative. It's important if, for example, you have a certain agenda. If one of your agendas is that it's important for you to, you know, pass on your genes to your children, if that's a story you have in your mind and you think that that's important, then it becomes important for you. But it's not objectively important. See? And it might be more important that you reproduce yourself in other ways. Of course, you can do both. You can reproduce yourself biologically and socially, culturally, and in many other ways. So you don't have to limit yourself to one. I'm not here advocating against reproducing children. If you want children, have children. I'm not justifying any actions here. I'm just trying to get you to see the relativity of what reproduction is. And also, I'm trying to get you to think outside the box. I'm trying to free you, actually, from this restraint that you have in your mind, because I get the sense that a lot of people don't want children these days, but they feel kind of bad and guilty and obligated to have children because in their mind there's this myth which they think is real. They think it's grounded in science and biology. There's this myth that you must reproduce or something important is going to be lost. There's even some men or some women in the world who are unable to reproduce, you know, for whatever reasons, because they have a disease or a disorder of some kind. They're not able to have children. And then they feel bad and guilty about it for decades. They beat themselves up because they think, oh, well, how terrible my life is that I wasn't able to make children. It seems like my entire family lineage has been lost, and now I can't have a meaningful life anymore. Especially spirodynamic stage blue people, they tend to view reproduction as an almost moral imperative. That's why a lot of religiously conservative people don't use contraceptives. They're against condoms. They're against teaching of sex education. They're against birth control. They're against, of course, abortion, for that reason, but also for additional reasons. And abortion is a complicated topic, which I don't want to get into here. So that's not the only reason that people are against abortion. But it's one of the reasons. Because sort of coming from that religious, conservative, traditional worldview, your lineage and your tradition, your family tradition is very important. So the idea of passing on your lineage via your genes, but also via teaching your children the right morals, the right religion, and all this, this becomes a huge obsession for many stage blue people, which is over half the world. Over the half the world's population is obsessed with this idea of family lineage as though it's not a fiction. Your family lineage is a total fiction. And besides which, what exactly are you passing on? Let's get very technical and scientific. Because you see, stage orange, spirodynamic stage orange folks, who are just one level above stage blue, they also can subscribe to this idea of needing to biologically reproduce. Because at stage orange, that's sort of the scientific paradigm. And at the scientific materialist paradigm, there's this kind of notion of survival of the fittest and evolution, which is an extremely oversimplified and grossly distorted and bastardized notion of what evolution is. But anyways, people who first learn about evolution, they latch onto it and they say, oh, evolution. So now everything looks like it's all about reproduction. Right. I've seen men on pickup forums, for example, justify, indiscriminately cheating on their girlfriends and so forth with this sort of scientific story of like, well, it's survival of the fittest and reproduction. And it's, you know, it's just in my genes to sow my seeds around the earth. And they think when they're telling these stories to themselves, they think they're actually being scientific. It's a complete bastardization of science. Because if we get really technical with the science, well, there's a couple of points. First of all, science never tells you what a thing is or what a thing's identity is. So going back to our original point of reproduction being relative to how you define what a self is, see, science doesn't tell you what a self is because there is no self. So of course, science can't tell you what a self is. You have to make it up. Or if you're doing poor science, then you use science to make up a self. Of course, in this case, you're bullshitting yourself. But anyways, science makes up the self to be a biological organism. That's part of the materialistic scientific paradigm. So that's only one way to define a self. You don't have to define the self that way. You could define yourself as the entire universe. You could identify yourself as the entire human race. You could identify yourself as all living beings on the entire planet or in the entire universe. In which case, like, if your identity is not that of an individual human, but that of the entire human race, then it doesn't matter to you whether you reproduce or whether your neighbor reproduces. It makes no difference. Because your identity is not at that little local level, it's more at a higher, more global level, but still limited. But if you identify even more broadly with the entire universe, it doesn't matter to you if humans reproduce or not. It doesn't matter to you if humans die or not, because in the end, even if the human species dies out, nothing will be lost. The universe is still going forward. Evolution is still happening. Evolution is not just happening at the genetic level. It is not just happening within the human species. It is not just happening within mammals. It is not just happening even within living things. It's always happening at all times. It's a feature of consciousness. See? But that's a deeper point. I won't get into evolution here. So part of the problem is that the materialistic scientific paradigm has a very limited notion of what evolution is. They only look at it genetically. but genetics is just 1% of they're leaving out the other 99% of evolution. There's cultural evolution, there's physical evolution, there's evolution of consciousness. I mean, so much stuff. I'll talk about evolution in the future. So anyways, so science doesn't tell you what your identity is. It doesn't tell you what you are. It doesn't tell you who you are. You are doing that, and your culture is doing that for you. And of course, science is part of your culture. So my point is that you can change your identity, and then reproduction will change for you. So if you want to get very technical about the science, point number one is that science doesn't actually tell you what you are, therefore it cannot tell you what you need to do to reproduce, because that depends on how you think you are, what you think you are, who you think you are. See? So if you change your definition of yourself, then science can give you new ways to reproduce. For example, if you start to include cultural evolution and cultural influence as part of what you consider reproduction of the self. If you start to consider the reproduction of your mind as more important than the reproduction of your genes, then all of a sudden science can give you a bunch of different methods for how to reproduce your mind rather than your genes. You can, for example, write books like Shakespeare did, and then there you go. You've reproduced yourself even more successfully, because it's actually easier to maintain a book or a DVD disc than it is to maintain a genetic pool. See, genetic pools are very flexible. Which leads us to point number two, if you want to get really technical with the science. What exactly is being reproduced when you have children? I mean, it's not like you're making a clone of yourself. Your genes are getting diluted by 50%, according to science. Maybe even more, because there's random mutations and other kinds of mutations, which maybe are not random. And that's just one generation. That's 20 years. In 40 years, it's going to be diluted by to 25%. And then to 12%, and so on and down the line. And within a few generations, basically, you're down to single digits. So what really is left of your original gene pool? And why is this, why do you think that your genes are somehow special or important? Can you see the absurdity of that? The position that somehow your genes are important and need to be passed down into the future? Can you see how absurdly self-biased and narcissistic this is to actually subscribe to this idea? The idea that your family lineage is somehow special and important and better than other families? You think your family lineage deserves to reproduce more than the gorillas living in the Amazon or in the, I mean, not in the Amazon, in the Congo? I meant to say Congo. You think your lineage is more important than gorillas? Of course not. It's pure selfishness. It's a complete fiction. Which brings us to the point now, see, we're really now bringing in the concept of self-bias here. And also the concept of survival. So go check out my episodes called Understanding Self-Bias and Understanding Survival Part 1 and Part 2. Those are going to be critical. So we're bringing in these core foundational principles here of this work of self-bias, survival, and relativity. And now the fourth one is non-duality and oneness. See, we're bringing all four of these together, and now we're using that to deconstruct the notion of reproduction. So how is self-bias and survival relevant here? Well, look, first of all, I want you to admit to yourself that there's absolutely nothing special whatsoever about your genes or your lineage. It's as special as any other's. Your genes are no more important than that of an ant or a fly or a worm or a parasite or a virus. No more important. So first of all, can you admit that to yourself? Can you become conscious of that? For you to admit that, you will have to be able to step outside of your self-bias, because your sense of self is distorting your perception of reality. So if you're really attached to your sense of self, your identity, is going to include not just your biology. It's going to include your, for example, your family lineage. all the memories you have of sitting around the coffee table with your parents looking at photo albums. You know, some families are really into the whole family lineage thing. These are the more the traditional families. And then the more modern families, not so much. Of course, still, even the modern family, you know, has a sense of who your grandparents were. But anyways, some people really obsess. You know, they actually go online. They do the whole genetic testing. They do the genealogy thing where they actually track down their great-great-great-grandparents, where they came from, who they were, and all this. Why is that? Why are people interested in that? Is it important? Of course not. I mean, it's really silly. It's silly, because if you want to track this back, track it back all the way to the first life form on this planet. Track it back to microbe. I mean, that to microbes, that is your great-great-great-grandparents. So where you're drawing these boundaries between who were your great-grandparents and who weren't, who are your relatives, who aren't, and then, you know, are monkeys your relatives or not? These are arbitrary boundaries that you're drawing. Of course, monkeys are your relatives. Of course, worms are your relatives. We're all one. We're all coming from the same place, and we're all going to the same place. So where you draw your boundaries is completely subjective and arbitrary. There's nothing scientific about where you're drawing your boundaries. All scientific classification systems, by the way, the whole like species and genus and families and all of that, the branches, these are all arbitrary. They're not objective. You could redraw all those lines. And scientists dispute. They have disputes about which groups of animals belong in which category, because it's relative to how you want to define things. These are not lines that are drawn within the genetic code. You can't open up some DNA file, look at it, and then see, oh, okay, this belongs to the genus of cats and mammals and this and that. Like, no. The DNA doesn't make these distinctions. Humans make these distinctions. So anyways, I want you to acknowledge to yourself how self-biased the meaning that you're attaching to your family lineage is. And also understand why that is. The reason that you're doing that is because you're a survival machine. And you're unconsciously acting out survival patterns. That's what this principle of survival is about that we're introducing here. So if you study survival very closely, then you realize that you're a survival machine and you're just unconsciously acting out these survival patterns, one of which is attaching meaning and importance to your family and to your relatives. Why do you do this? Is it because they're actually important in some objective sense? Of course not. Of course not. Is there any objective reason why some child in Africa dying is less important than your mother or father dying or your child dying? Of course not. If you're totally honest and you're not self-biased about it, you'll have to admit that it doesn't matter which of those dies. Now, of course, you can have personal preferences and so forth, and that's your self-bias shining through. You might say, well, Leo, but I don't know that kid in Africa. I mean, yeah, he's important too, but he's not important as my mom is because, you know, my mom, she raised me and she worked so hard for me and she did all these beautiful things and she loves me and she takes care of me. And now I have to give back to her and I feel a sense of obligation. Yeah, I understand all that. Of course, I feel that as well. You know, we're just human. We're survival machines. But what I'm telling you is that is survival instinct. You have to care about your relatives to a certain sense, because without that, you'd be dead. You couldn't be here otherwise. And people who are coming from very traditional backgrounds, Spiral Dynamic Stage Blue and even earlier, they're extremely family-oriented. Why is that? Because at that level of consciousness and development, it's almost impossible to survive. How are you going to survive in a stage blue or a stage red country that's at that level of development? How are you going to survive in Africa or in the Middle East by yourself? You won't. It's a family affair. You have to survive as a family or you're going to die. Now, these days, it's a little bit easier because we have the internet, we have a lot of technology. So these days, you probably could survive on your own in the Middle East and in Africa and certain other underdeveloped parts of the world. By the way, when I say that these parts of the world are underdeveloped, I'm not saying that they're permanently underdeveloped. I'm just saying they're underdeveloped right now. I'm not saying they're inferior by saying they're underdeveloped, right? So be careful about that, because people could misconstrue what I'm saying here as some sort of racist argument and some sort of like white supremacist position. That's not at all what I'm talking about. There's really no difference between the races, but they are at different levels of growth. They're not all equally developed. Not all countries and geographies and ethnicities are equally developed. So that's not a moral condemnation. That's not a judgment. That's just simply, you know, there's parts of the world that are very, very underdeveloped. Africa and the Middle East are two of those parts. This is not demeaning them. In the future, they might become more developed than Europe and then America. Great. I got no problem with that. So anyways, to return back to point, what was I saying? Yeah, so to survive in these very underdeveloped parts of the world, nowadays it's easier to do it as an individual because we have a lot of technology that allows you to do it. For example, you can have a job as a YouTuber, for example, and you could live in the Middle East and you could make millions of dollars. And in fact, there are YouTubers like that. And you could leave your family, never talk to them again, and you would survive just fine, probably. Still, people would look at you weird if you told them that you left your family. See, there would be a lot of stigma against it. Why is there this stigma? Precisely because it's a survival defense mechanism. See, people put that stigma on you. For example, India is also another one of these countries and ethnicities this is extremely family oriented. Huge extended families, giant weddings, and a lot of family rituals. And then, you know, parents put a lot of pressure on their children to have families, to have kids, and make grandbabies and all this stuff. I have some Indian friends, so I know how that works. So what is that? That's survival. See, that's how people survive. That's how those cultures survive. See, it's not only about individual reproduction and survival. It's also about the reproduction and survival of that culture. For the Hindu culture to survive, it has to maintain those deep family roots. Otherwise, that culture is going to get diluted and it's going to disintegrate, which is why if you're Hindu and you have a Hindu mother and father, they pressure you so much for those, you know, to start your own family and all that. Same thing if you're, Middle Eastern. Huge importance placed there on family because it's a very harsh environment. Historically, that part of the world was extremely tribal because it's very difficult to survive in that harsh desert climate. You basically can't do it on your own. You need strong social connections, not just within your family, but also within your tribe, within your clan. Because there's other clans that will kill you when the geography is so harsh. So people were forced to adopt strong family values, not because strong family values are important or good or moral. None of this. Or true. Of course, there's nothing true about them at all. It's a total fiction. But this was a necessary fiction for you to be here today if you're from that part of the world and from that ethnicity. See? So this is what I mean by survival. Start to notice how all of the stuff that you think is so valuable and important and moral and good and true, that this is all bullshit veneer. Underneath that is just pure survival. For example, if you like your ethnic cuisine, if you're from the Middle East and you like Middle Eastern cuisine, or if you're Indian, you like Indian cuisine, or you're German and you like German cuisine, is it because the cuisine is actually good? No, this is a bullshit story you tell yourself. The reason you like that cuisine is because you're from that part of the world, your genetics are from that part of the world, and of course, you need to like the kind of foods that are available geographically in that part of the world. It would make no sense for you to live in some landlocked country which has no seafood, and for you to love seafood when there's no seafood around. See, this would be like genetic torture for you. Now, I'm not saying you're limited by your genes. I'm not saying that if you grew up in a landlocked country that you can never love seafood. Of course, you can learn to love seafood. But that's going to be somewhat of an acquired taste for you. See, your genetics have actually evolved to eat the kind of foods that your ancestors ate. This was very important for survival. So, of course, if you're Hindu, you love Hindu food. Of course. It's not because it's the best food. It's because that's what you needed to survive. And in a certain sense, it's still part of your survival. Now, today, of course, you might say, well, Leo, but, you know, I can survive on any kind of food. I can survive on McDonald's today. Sure, you can. But remember, survival is not just biological or physical. Survival is mental. Survival is conceptual. Survival is psychological as well. If you grew up eating Indian food, spicy food, various kinds of masalas and so forth, and various kinds of naans and flatbreads and so forth, you grew up with that. That's wired into your psyche. You have all sorts of positive memories attached to it. Maybe your mother fed you this food. That was her way of showing you love. And whatever. And maybe your father made you some special meal on the holidays, and that was his way of showing you love and approval. And, you know, maybe you never got approval from your father, except on the holidays when he made your favorite meal and shared it with the family, and that's the way you got your father's approval. Okay, that's wired into your psyche, because your psyche needs love and approval from its surroundings and from its family, especially to be able to grow up in a psychologically healthy way and to be able to survive effectively, you see? So in this sense, the food played a role in that. And so, of course, even now, that food is part of your survival. Even now, you might move from India, for example, to the United States. You might integrate with the U.S. culture, with American culture. But still, something about you will always bring you back to that old classic food that you were fed when you were a child. You know, there's something about that will warm your heart. Is that really because the food is objectively the best? No. It's survival. You're programmed with survival. See? So the key to our work, with all the work I talk about with actualize.org, is to be able to notice our own survival mechanisms, how robotic and automatic they are. There's nothing special about them whatsoever. Also to notice how self-biased we are. By self-biased, what I mean is that our view of reality is completely shaped by our sense of self. How you define yourself defines how you see the world. See? Which brings us back to reproduction. So, one of the freedoms you get when you awaken, if you awaken very deeply, and you realize oneness very deeply, is you're freed of the obligation to reproduce. Before, you lived your life thinking like, well, I should probably have kids, because if I don't, something important will be lost. After you awaken, you realize, oh, I'm infinite. I'm not this body, I'm not this mind, I'm not this psyche, I'm not anything at all. I'm everything and nothing. And I'm eternal, I'm immortal, I can't die. Even though this body can fall dead, and of course it will, very shortly, it matters not at all. In fact, I don't need to do anything to reproduce. I am automatically, infinitely reproducing forever, for eternity. I don't even need to write a famous play like Shakespeare did. I don't even need to become a millionaire or a billionaire or a celebrity. I don't need to make giant donations to charities so people remember my name and put my name on buildings in universities. Even these things I'm freed of having to do if I realize that I'm the entire universe. See? This freedom is very liberating, because now you're truly free to live your life however you want to live. So if you want to have kids because you genuinely enjoy having kids around and you enjoy raising them, go ahead, do it. Great, do it consciously. Raise your kids consciously. have them consciously, not accidentally. See? You still have that freedom. That's not taken away from you. But you do it consciously, realizing that your children are not any more special than your neighbor's children. And that makes you more compassionate towards all children in the world. And you can still raise your children while you have this compassion. Compassion is not limited. In fact, compassion is just love, and love is unlimited. It's your true nature, is infinite love. It's the one unlimited thing that there is. So you can do that, or you can realize that, well, since I'm liberated, I don't need to have children, because, hey, I'm going to be reproducing anyways through an infinite number of means, because I'm the entire universe, and I'm infinite and eternal. Well, why don't I just write a book? That book that I always wanted to write, let me just go write that, and I'll reproduce in that way. I find that more of an interesting way to reproduce than by having children. Maybe I don't like children. Or maybe it's not a book. Maybe for you it's music. You reproduce yourself through music. If not music, then through cooking, through architecture, through film, through public speaking, through helping animals. Now you might wonder, well, Leo, how am I reproducing myself if I am helping animals? Let's say I start an animal shelter for abandoned cats and dogs. How is that reproduction? You have to really think outside the box of what reproduction is. Okay. Really, what you're doing when you're reproducing is you're transferring some amount of spirit or essence or form to some other part of reality. You're sort of infecting one form with another form. And that is literally what you're doing when you're having sex, is you're sort of impregnating one form with another form, and then that form has a resemblance to the old form, but not totally. It's not a perfect copy. There's always dilution and change because diversity is always happening. This is for the greater good of all, because otherwise there'd be no point to really to reproduction. Everyone would just be a clone, which would be kind of lame. So anyways, you're doing this. You're transferring form. That's what you're doing. But the transfer of form is an abstract notion. It's not limited to genetics, you see. The transfer of form can happen with ideas. For example, in my videos with actualize.org, I am transferring my mind and my psyche into you. I am transferring my spirit into you. Now, of course, there's nothing particularly important about my mind or my spirit or my psyche. They're all equally good. But of course, I have a preference for my own psyche and my own mind, and I make selections about what kind of things I think should persist within reality and what kind of things I shouldn't. So for example, I could be creating videos about white nationalism and how great Nazism is. I could be doing that with my life, but I've decided, no, I don't like that. Like those sets of ideas, that's not a set of ideas that I want to reproduce. Instead, I want to reproduce a set of ideas of like consciousness, truth, love, helping you understand survival and self-bias and the mind and all this sorts of stuff. This is what I'm interested in. So because of this, I'm transferring this into you, to millions of minds. You see? Now, the mistake people make here is they say, well, yeah, Leo, sure, you're doing that, but it's not true reproduction. And what I'm telling you is that's wrong. Because there is no true reproduction. It's as true as anything else. But even this, I don't need to do. If I wanted to, I could just sit and meditate for the rest of my life, not release any more content, not write any books, not make any public speeches, and I would still reproduce. When you're fully awake and you're fully conscious, you can look at every object in the room and realize that it is your own creation. For example, you can look at children, strangers on the airplane. I was flying over the holidays. There were some babies and kids in the airplane near me. I was sitting next to a small child, probably 2 years old. Thankfully, she was quiet. She wasn't screaming the whole flight. But I looked at her. You can look at her when you're really conscious. You can look at her and realize that even though that's not my child in the sense that I didn't impregnate that woman and have this child. But that is my child from a larger absolute perspective. Because I am the entire universe, which means I am the mother and father of that child. And I am the child itself. There's no boundary between me and the child. You see how this works? Changing your identity is a hell of a thing. Do not underestimate the significance and the consequences of expanding your sense of identity. When I talk about expanding your sense of identity, I'm not merely talking about doing it in your mind as an imaginary, fictional, conceptual thing. No. What I'm telling you is that to expand your identity, you have to realize that your current biological limited identity was never real to begin with. That's what begins the process of the expansion of identity. You see? And for that, you really need to kick this scientific materialist paradigm that you're operating under, because it's not letting you change your identity, because science is under the delusion that your identity is biological and fixed and material. This is untrue. And of course, science has never proven it. Ask a scientist, ask a physicist to prove to you that you are your body. They can't do it. Not possible. Science has never proven it, nor will science ever prove it, because identity is a purely subjective and relative thing. How can you prove it? It is whatever you believe it is. So if that's the case, you might as well subscribe to a wider identity. The wider your identity, the better off you're going to be. And then your ultimate identity, your awakened identity, that isn't a belief. That is absolute truth. Can't be proven, though, because it's absolute. Absolute is prior to proof. So anyways, there are many different ways that you can reproduce. Once you're liberated, you can do none of them. You can do one of them. You can do multiple of them. Whatever floats your boat. Whatever suits you. See, that's the beauty of liberation. Now you can consciously decide what kind of impact you want to have in the world. If you think what the world needs is more babies with your genes in them, go do that. If you think that the world doesn't need more babies, maybe you think the world needs more love and care. And you know what? Love and care, these are contagious and transferable things. So let's go back to that originally dropped thread. I dropped the thread about how is running a shelter for cats and dogs, how is that reproducing yourself? Well, if you're conscious enough, for example, to realize that what you are, your truest nature is infinite love, and that really what all the universe is doing is trying to maximize love, including, by the way, through genetic reproduction. If you realize that that is a form of love and so is everything else, then you can also consciously decide on what kind of impact you want to have in the world. So rather than, for example, expressing your love through your children, you can express it through starting a shelter for cats and dogs, because you notice that there's maybe a lack of love for cats and dogs. They're abused, they're abandoned, they suffer, and so forth. And you could help them a lot. You know, imagine if you save 100,000 cats and dogs over your lifetime. Imagine what kind of impact you're having on the larger ecosystem. You see, mankind, the beauty of mankind, and also the horror of mankind, is that we are a collective. That's horrible in many ways. Leads to things like Nazism and genocide and bigotry and racism and war and so forth. But the upside of it is that since we are a collective, we can influence each other in ways that other animals cannot, because they don't have a rich culture. For example, take dogs. Dogs don't really have a giant collective culture. So for dogs, there's not much of a way that a dog can reproduce its own mind other than through fucking another dog. But with humans, we have a lot more options. You can start this animal shelter for cats and dogs. And as you help all these animals, you might shoot videos of those animals. You might create a documentary about it. You might post it on YouTube. People might see it. Maybe they'll see it on Netflix. Millions of people see how you're helping these dogs. They get inspired by the love and the commitment that you have for these animals and for your life purpose of helping animals. And then that inspires them to go out and do their own thing. Maybe if a million people see your animal shelter, maybe 10 of them will start their own animal shelter. So that's 10 more, right? So you multiplied by 10 there. But even those that don't start an animal shelter, they'll still get inspired and they'll just go out and use that inspiration in some unique way that's true to them. You know, like someone gets inspired not to start an animal shelter because they're not good at that, or maybe they don't even like animals, but they're touched by the spirit of your work and the love you expressed. And they might do that to create a movie or write a song. And then that song gets streamed online and played by hundreds of millions of people, becomes a hit song. And then that song inspires millions more people to do whatever they're going to do, to be nicer to their children and so forth. And so in this sense, really, you might say, well, if you're Leo, but if I'm not having sex and reproducing genetically, that means I'm not really shaping human society. I'm not helping children. But you are, by expressing your love through this animal shelter thing. Indirectly, it'll have a cascading effect, and you could help millions of children. You could write a children's book that teaches children how to care for animals, for example. That could be even more powerful than just having one child who you don't even raise properly because you're so unconscious. And you raise some dysfunctional child who becomes, you know, a rapist or something. Rather than doing that, you could have a very positive impact on society, on mankind. You just have to start to see this whole thing in a much bigger picture sort of way. You have to really zoom out and look at what all of mankind is doing. We're all influencing each other. This is a beautiful thing, and it's an ugly, hellish thing, which is actually great, because the only reason it's a hellish and ugly thing is because we're doing it unconsciously. Most of us are. So as we become more conscious, as we awaken to our true selves, as we really start to understand what oneness means, what love means, what reproduction really means, all the different ways we can reproduce, we start thinking outside the box and we start realizing that, hey, you know, we've already got 7 billion mouths to feed. Maybe this planet doesn't need more mouths to feed. Maybe what it needs more of is more teachers, more doctors, more veterinarians, more social workers, more conscious politicians, more meditation teachers, more yoga classes, more, well, maybe we got enough of those. Come to think of it. Just kidding. You know, there's so many things we need more of. Specifically, what we need more of is more consciousness, more conscious everything. Everything is improved by consciousness. We need more conscious business owners, more conscious military leaders, more conscious presidents, more conscious lovers, more conscious parents, more conscious children. And the beautiful thing about consciousness is that it's formless, and it expresses itself and teaches itself in an infinite variety of ways. So consciousness is not limited to reproducing itself through any one way. It reproduces itself in all ways simultaneously. See? Don't underestimate the impact that you can have on the world with your consciousness and your life's work. You can have massive impact. You might become a teacher, and just a simple, ordinary elementary school teacher. But the love that you put into your work, working with your kids, could have the difference between raising a child who comes through your class to be a Hitler or to be a Mahatma Gandhi or a Buddha. That's how much impact you could have as a teacher. See? And all that's really required there is consciousness and love. if you teach children with consciousness and love, and you're able to embody it and to live those values, then a lot of people who would have veered in the direction of becoming a Hitler or some other version of a devil will go the other way. You see? Which is why being a teacher is so rewarding. Which is, of course, what I do. Just not in a classroom of the conventional type. So this is the power of this work. As you do this work, you start to really think outside of conventional boxes of what reproduction is, of what sex is, of what morality is, of what culture is, of what humanity is, of what you as a self are. And of course, all of it is tied to you as a self. Really, the key that needs to be unlocked is that as you expand your sense of self, all of the possibilities open up for you. And you're freed up to have a conscious impact in the world, whatever you want that to be. And then that leads us right into my life purpose course. Go check that out, where I talk for 25 hours and explain in detail how to develop a sense of life purpose, the kind of principles that I follow to create my sense of life purpose, to live a meaningful, profound, and rewarding life with your work. See? Because what you put out into the world then comes back to you as well. The more conscious your work is, the more conscious you make the world. And you are living in the world, so your impact is very important. And you have no choice about making an impact in the world. You're going to make an impact in the world no matter what. The question is, will it be a small impact or a big impact? Will it be an impact towards hate, judgment, and devilry? Or will it be an impact towards love, goodness, truth, consciousness, and all those sorts of things? See? My work will outlast your children. If you go have sex with somebody, have children with them, I guarantee you my impact on the world will be larger than your impact just by having that child. Because your child will die in 80 years, but my work will live on for centuries. Perhaps for millennia, we'll see. Depends on how good I do my work. I'm still working on it. Maybe not yet, but we're getting there. I'm slowly building up to it, you see? So, really what I'm doing with these videos is, rather than ejaculating into some vagina, I'm ejaculating straight into your mind. That's what's happening here. But you can't understand that if you're so fucking literal-minded that the only kind of reproduction you can understand is the ejaculating in a vagina kind. See, you have to be wiser. You have to be more intelligent than that. To be intelligent means you have to think abstractly about reality. You think so abstractly about reality that you're so open to things taking different forms. And when you're that open, then this new possibility opens up to you that, oh yeah, ejaculation doesn't need to just happen in a vagina. That's one form of ejaculation, a very limited form of it. It can also happen inside a mind, which is what's been happening in all the episodes that I've ever released. It's ejaculation straight into your mind. Ta-da! Happy holidays and Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. There you go. Everything explained, right? So anyways, to wrap this up, I hope you can see the power of how we're taking these fundamental principles and concepts like relativity and oneness and non-duality and survival and self-bias, and we're using them to really radically change our understanding of reality. In a certain way, nothing has changed. You can still go have sex. You can still go eat your food. You can still love your family. You can do all those things. You can have children. Nothing about that has changed. But your relationship to it all has changed significantly, which now opens up new avenues for you. And now you don't feel trapped by life. You don't feel like you have to do what your parents told you you have to do. You don't have to feel guilty about it. You can forge your own life. And if you've decided for yourself that, hey, you know, yeah, I come from a Hindu family. I come from some Hindu tradition where family is important. But you know what? I'm more interested in writing poetry. And that's going to be how I make my name in the world. And that's how I'm going to shape the world. And I'm going to spread love through my poetry. And in this way, I'm going to make an even bigger impact than if I honor my family by having children. Then that's what I'm going to do. And I'm not going to feel guilty about it. And in fact, I'm going to be thrilled about it. And I'm going to do it with a passion. And the rest will take care of itself. See, that kind of freedom, that's what consciousness allows you to do. Unconsciousness makes you stuck in various kinds of dead ends. You're stuck in your job. You're stuck having to have kids. You're stuck with your spouse or your relationship. You're stuck with your religion. You're stuck with some stupid old science paradigm. You're stuck with some old politics. So you're stuck with all this stuff and you don't know how to change it because all of it ties back to you. If you can change yourself, that is the superpower. That's the ultimate power that you have. By changing yourself, you will then become the most powerful change agent in the world. And then you'll use that to change the world in positive and conscious ways. See, but it all starts with you. So start laying that groundwork by working deeply on yourself. Spend 5 or 10 years working deeply on yourself, and then you will be in a very powerful position to affect the world in the right kind of ways that it needs to be affected. And remember that there's no one right way or best way that the world needs to be affected. What we need is we need more people waking up and becoming highly conscious, and then affecting the world with a passion in their unique way, in a variety, an infinite variety of ways. We need people who are going to be conscious, doctors and teachers and lawyers and politicians and environmentalists and veterinarians and all of this. So don't worry about that. There is plenty of niches. There are plenty of niches open for all of you guys. You don't need to just copy me. It's not as stupid as like, oh, well, for me to transfer consciousness and love to others, I need to do exactly what Leo is doing. I need to start a YouTube channel. No, stop thinking in that stupid little box. What you need to do is find what you resonate with, what you're passionate about, something new. Find something new. Don't just copy me. Don't just copy somebody else. Find something new. Find your thing. Develop that. And if you want to know how to do that in detail, check out my Life Purpose course. But there you go. That's how reproduction is a fiction. All right, I'm done here. Please click like button for me. And you can support me on Patreon at patreon.com/actualized. You can find the link under the YouTube videos down below. I appreciate those donations. And come check out my website. That's actualized.org. You'll find the forum, my blog, the Life Purpose course of which I spoke, and my book list, and then other stuff that I hope to release in the future. So there you go. What do I want to say to finish this? Abstraction is a very powerful principle that we haven't spoken of much. I'm going to have an episode about it in the future because it's so powerful. One of the biggest problems I see these days is people get stuck in thinking about reality in literal ways. Both religious and scientifically minded people fall into this trap of literalism. They think that things are literally one way. There's only one way to read the Bible. There's only one interpretation of the Quran. There's only one interpretation of science, of quantum mechanics, or there's only one interpretation of evolution, or there's only one way that reproduction is, and it's only genetic reproduction. That's the only way it is. That's literally what it is. But that's not how consciousness works. Consciousness is highly abstract. In fact, the more abstractly you can think and reason, the more conscious and wise you're going to be. You need to be able to think in terms of metaphors, analogies. You need to make interconnections between things that are loosely related. You need to be able to zoom out and see the big picture between things, right? These sorts of abstract connections are crucial, because otherwise you're going to get straitjacketed in your mind. You're going to get stuck on thinking of a thing in a certain literal way without realizing that all literal ways of looking at the world are something that you're constructing and creating. The world is not a literal place. It's a giant conscious mind. And one of the features of a mind is that it can think abstractly about things. Things are not solid and concrete. See? They only appear that way. The more conscious you become, the more you're going to be able to appreciate and understand what I mean by that. But anyways, more on that in the future. Happy New Year, and I'll see you in the next decade.